Chapter 7. A Temptation. Lydgate's only hope was to get a loan from Bulstrode. He did not want to do this because he disliked the banker and knew that most people in Middlemarch disliked him. Until now, he had considered himself totally independent of Bulstrode. His work at the new hospital had been done because Lydgate himself was interested in charity and public health. But with these terrible debts, he could no longer be independent. Bulstrode asked Lydgate to come to his office at the bank to discuss the new hospital.
"I am no longer young, Mr. Lydgate, and my health is not good," said the banker. "So I am going to retire from some of my business interests. I'll move away from Middlemarch to a place by the sea. It'll be better for my health. I'll also retire from the management of the new hospital. I've talked to Mrs. Casaubon, and she says that she might take over my part in the financing of the hospital." "I'm sorry to hear that you're leaving the hospital," said Lydgate. "You know that the other Middlemarch doctors disagree with my methods. With your support, I was able to treat fevers as I thought they should be treated. That is especially important, now that we have a case of cholera in town." "Nevertheless, I can't give any further financial help to the hospital," said Bulstrode.
Lydgate thought that Bulstrode must have money problems of his own, but asking the banker for a loan was his last hope, and so he explained about all his debts and asked for a loan of £1,000. Bulstrode said that he could not help. He advised Lydgate to go bankrupt. Lydgate felt that the banker had no human sympathy, but in fact Mr. Bulstrode was too preoccupied with his own worries to help anyone else. In the past few months, Raffles had come back to Middlemarch several times. Each time, Raffles went into Middlemarch and got drunk in the public houses. Bulstrode was afraid that Raffles might tell his secrets in town, so he gave the man money to go away. The day before, Raffles had come back to the Shrubs. He was ill. Mr. Bulstrode put him to bed in his own bedroom. He told his wife that he was taking care of a miserable creature, the victim of vice, as an act of Christian charity. The fever had made Raffles delirious. He was speaking plainly about those facts in the past that Bulstrode wanted to keep secret. Bulstrode was afraid that someone might hear, so he sat by the sick man's bed and allowed no one else to enter the room. He sat up all night praying. When Bulstrode returned from the bank after his conversation with Lydgate, Raffles was worse. Illness had changed him. Instead of being loud and sarcastic, he was now timid and frightened. Bulstrode sent a note to Lydgate, asking him to come to the Shrubs. Sitting by the bed, waiting for Lydgate, Bulstrode thought that perhaps God intended to save him from disgrace and humiliation after all. Raffles might die. Bulstrode prayed,
"Thy will be done."
When Lydgate arrived, Bulstrode spoke to him outside the room.
"I've asked you to come, Mr. Lydgate, because an unfortunate man is here and is seriously ill. His name is John Raffles. He worked for me many years ago. I feel it's my duty to help him."
When he had thoroughly examined the patient, Lydgate spoke to Bulstrode in private again.
"He must stay in bed. Someone should watch him all the time." "I'll watch him." "Have you no servant who could do it?" "Yes, I have Mr. and Mrs. Abel, but they are inexperienced. I'll watch the patient, and they can help me if necessary." "All right. Then I'll give my instructions to you," said Lydgate. "Don't give him any alcoholic drinks. He'll ask for them, but you must refuse him."
"Is it serious?"
asked Bulstrode.
"I'm not sure. He was a strong, healthy man before he fell ill. If you follow my instructions, he should get better in a few days. On the other hand, he might get worse. We'll have to wait and see. I'll come again tomorrow morning."
As Lydgate rode away, he thought about the treatment of cases of alcoholic poisoning such as this. Most doctors in Britain at the time believed that patients with this illness should be allowed to drink alcohol and be given large doses of opium. Lydgate was completely against this treatment. Whenever he had treated cases of alcoholic poisoning in the past, he had forbidden alcohol and opium, and his patients had got better. Lydgate did not wonder why Bulstrode was taking care of Raffles. He supposed that the sick man was the object of Bulstrode's Christian charity.
I wish he had the same feelings of Christian charity for me,
he thought. He was on his way home to tell Rosamond that his last hope of paying the debts was gone. She had told him that if the furniture had to be sold, she would go back to her father's house. As he rode along, Lydgate thought how different these troubles would be if he had a loving companion to share them. Bulstrode sat by the sick man's bed, deep in thought. He wanted Raffles to die, but he intended to do nothing to cause that death. He intended to follow Lydgate's instructions exactly. Now he deeply regretted having refused to give Lydgate a loan that morning. If he had given Lydgate the loan, Lydgate would have felt obligated to him. What if Raffles spoke deliriously while Lydgate was there? The next day, Lydgate came at noon. Bulstrode noticed that the doctor looked pale and tired. Raffles was worse. He had refused to eat, and he had not slept. He had been awake, feverish and delirious all night.
I think we should give him a little opium. Very little, just to make him sleep,
said Lydgate.
Give him 3 drops of opium every half hour for 2 hours, then stop. It is very important that you stop after 2 hours. Don't let him drink anything alcoholic, and make sure the dose of opium is exactly as I told you.
You yourself are looking ill, Mr. Lydgate,
said Bulstrode.
I told you of my troubles yesterday,
said Lydgate coldly.
Yes. I've thought about your situation, and I've decided to help you. I think you said you need £1,000. If you wait a moment, I'll write you a cheque for that amount.
Thank you, Mr. Bulstrode,
said Lydgate, suddenly full of joy and relief. As he rode home to tell Rosamond the good news, he did not wonder why Bulstrode had changed his mind. At 6 o'clock, Bulstrode gave Raffles the first dose of opium, following Lydgate's instructions exactly. Half an hour later, he called Mrs. Abel.
Will you please sit with the patient tonight, Mrs. Abel? I'm very tired. I must sleep.
Certainly, sir,
said Mrs. Abel.
What should I give him?
Give him 3 drops of opium every half hour. Give him soup or water if he asks for it. If you need any help, call your husband.
Mr. Bulstrode went downstairs. He was not worried that Raffles might talk in Mrs. Abel's presence. The opium had made his speech incoherent. He sat in the drawing room for a long time, thinking about Raffles. Suddenly he realized that he had not told Mrs. Abel when to stop giving the opium to Raffles. He went upstairs thinking,
perhaps she was already giving him too much. I'm tired. It's not surprising that I forgot part of Lydgate's instructions. Should I go to my own room, or should I tell Mrs. Abel when to stop giving him the opium?
He paused in the corridor by the door to the room. He could hear the sick man talking incoherently.
Perhaps,
thought Bulstrode,
Lydgate is wrong. Perhaps more opium will help Raffles.
Mr. Bulstrode went into his own bedroom. A few minutes later, Mrs. Abel knocked on Mr. Bulstrode's bedroom door.
Excuse me, sir. Should I give the poor man some cognac? He says that nothing else will save him. He says he'll die without it. And I remember, sir, that when my master, Mr. Robinson, was ill, the doctor said to give him cognac all the time.
Mr. Bulstrode did not answer immediately. Then he gave Mrs. Abel a key and said,
there is plenty of cognac downstairs in the wine cellar.
The next morning, when Lydgate arrived, Raffles was clearly dying. Lydgate was disturbed about the case. Had Bulstrode followed his instructions exactly? Lydgate did not want to ask Bulstrode that question. It seemed like an insult. And Bulstrode was Lydgate's benefactor. An hour later, Raffles died.
Well,
thought Lydgate,
the man is dead. There is no point in implying that it was someone's fault. After all, my instructions might have been wrong.
5 days after the death of Raffles, 3 Middlemarch men, Mr. Bambridge, Mr. Hawley, and Mr. Hopkins, were standing outside their favourite public house when Mr. Bulstrode walked by.
That reminds me,
said Mr. Bambridge.
When I was in the village of Bilkley last Wednesday, I heard an interesting story about Bulstrode. Do you know how he got his money? He married an old woman when he was young.
He let her think that her daughter and grandchild were dead, even though he knew they were alive. Then, when the old woman died, he got all their money.
Who told you that?
Asked Mr. Hawley.
A drunken old man in a public house at Bilkley,
said Mr. Bambridge.
What was his name?
Asked Mr. Hawley.
Raffles.
Raffles?
Cried Mr. Hopkins, the undertaker.
I did his funeral yesterday. Bulstrode was there. His servant told me that Raffles died in Bulstrode's house. Did any doctor see him?
Asked Mr. Hawley.
Yes, Lydgate,
said Mr. Hopkins. Other men, hearing that the conversation was interesting, joined the group to listen to the gossip.
Lydgate and Bulstrode have always been close,
said Mr. Bambridge.
I don't like Lydgate, and I don't trust his methods,
said Mr. Hopkins.
Our doctor, Dr. Sprag, says that these modern methods are dangerous, and especially now that there's cholera in the town. We need doctors we can trust.
I heard there's going to be a town meeting to discuss the cholera,
said Mr. Bambridge.
Are you going?
Certainly,
said Mr. Hopkins.
All the men in town will want to be there to discuss how we can prevent the cholera from spreading.
Do you know that Lydgate has paid all his debts?
Said Mr. Hawley suddenly.
I heard it yesterday. They were going to take all his furniture, but at the last moment he found the money.
Yes,
said Mr. Hopkins.
I heard that. My brother works in the bank. He said that Mr. Bulstrode gave Lydgate a loan.
That sounds bad,
said Mr. Bambridge.
Perhaps Bulstrode gave Lydgate the money to keep quiet about the death of this fellow Raffles.
All the men listening agreed that this was probably true, and from there the gossip spread through Middlemarch like fire. The next day was a town meeting to discuss the cholera. All the men of Middlemarch were there. When Bulstrode and Lydgate entered the meeting together, people stopped talking and looked at them. The meeting began, and Mr. Bulstrode asked if he could speak on the subject of a new cemetery. The chairman said yes, but just then Mr. Hawley rose and said,
Before anyone speaks about the cemetery, I would like to speak about another subject, which I and many of the people of Middlemarch consider very important.
Mr. Bulstrode sat down, and Mr. Hawley continued.
Many of us in Middlemarch think that Mr. Bulstrode should resign from the public positions he holds. There are certain actions which, though not illegal, are as immoral as many illegal actions. I ask Mr. Bulstrode to deny, if he can, the scandalous statements made by a man now dead who died in his house. That man, known as John Raffles, claimed that Mr. Bulstrode got his money dishonestly.
Everyone in the room looked at Mr. Bulstrode, who had turned very pale. For many years, Mr. Bulstrode had been a powerful person in Middlemarch. He had often criticised other people for their sinful ways. He had acted as though he himself were the perfect example of Christian virtue. Now he was being publicly humiliated. God had not, after all, decided to spare him. God had abandoned him and left him exposed to these rough men who hated him and took pleasure in his humiliation. Lydgate heard the accusations with alarm, but as a doctor, he was even more alarmed by Bulstrode's pale face and trembling hands. The banker stood up to speak.
The people who are attacking me are doing so not because they want justice, but because they hate me. They have always hated me because I criticise them for their sinful lives. They spent all their money on sin, while I spent mine on charitable works.
Many voices were raised in disapproval of Bulstrode's speech, but one was louder than the rest.
If you mean me, sir,
cried Mr. Hawley,
I never pretended to be a saint as you do. Again, I ask you to explain or deny the accusations made against you.
The chairman turned to Bulstrode and said,
I think that because Mr. Hawley and his friends have asked it, you should offer an explanation of the things of which you have been accused. If you wish, I will listen to your explanation later today, in private. Now, I must ask you to leave, so that we can continue the meeting.
After a moment's hesitation, Bulstrode took his hat from the floor and slowly rose, but he seemed about to fall. Lydgate felt sure that the banker was not strong enough to walk out on his own. What could he do? He stood up, took Bulstrode's arm, and helped him out of the room. It was an act of compassion that he did naturally, as a man and as a doctor. But he knew that those present saw him as Bulstrode's friend and ally. He knew that by helping Bulstrode at that moment, he was separating himself from the other men in the room. Poor Lydgate could now see exactly what the other men of Middlemarch thought of him. They thought that he had taken a bribe to keep silent about the death of Raffles.